south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
First off, some news about my next Expat Insider Seminar. It'll be in Guatemala and El Salvador. Starting Friday, March 17, 2023, through Friday, March 24th. Yep, once again, it'll be a week long with 7 hotel nights included. Stand by for the pricing and details by going to expatplanb.com. The early bird discount sign-up sheet should be there now. If not, check in a day or two. Just go to expatplanb.com, expatplanb.com. Oh, and one last thing about the seminar. Past attendees and repeat offenders know one thing for sure. It's truly the best way to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your plan B. People keep telling me that. I hear it all the time. You won't want to miss it. All right, let's take an email from Pete. He says, Johnny, does that famous Latin American happiness thing rub off on gringos and expats? I sure hope so. And if so, how long does it take to kick in? He says, I'm way overdue for a double shot of happiness. Because here in Canada, every article I read and everywhere I look thoroughly depresses me. Makes me sad and it's bittersweet, but I'm glad now I didn't have any kids. Signed, Peter A. from Toronto. P.S. I'm so glad you announced you're having another seminar. I'll be coming down with my better half. If I could pay in Bitcoin, that would be nice. All right, thanks for that, Pete. Well, Pete, as far as the happiness thing, I can tell you this for sure, Latin America has certainly made a happier person out of me. Of course, since I'm a very superficial and frivolous guy, it kicked in fast. But what about those gringos and expats who are naturally stoic and cynical? Does the happiness thing rub off on them too? There's one in every crowd, but you need them at parties, you know. Every party needs a straight man, a stone-faced guy, you know? But I'll tell you, even with newly arrived gringos and expats who are on the glum side, you know the type, sour face, prone to complaining. Some gringos and expats are chronic complainers. But it's almost always the case that over time, they whine less. You see, it always turns out there are some commonalities when gringos and expats get together. Certain common hot-button topics will pop up and rile the crowd. But those hot-button topics are not really serious or earth-shattering, as opposed to those seriously depressing hot topics people talk about up in the first world. Down here, the hot-button topics that outrage gringos and expats are things like mañana time, terrible traffic, terrible drivers and motorcyclists, endless lines in banks and government offices, bad customer service, scruffy bathrooms, potholes and leaky roofs and busted sidewalks. Yeah, that stuff will get on your nerves, all right, and it's good to ignore that stuff because it's not going to change. But all those things are really little annoyances, not the end of the world. The good thing is, and it's quite a relief, it tells you a lot about the country you're in. Down here in Latin America, you'll never hear people complaining about Big Brother or the surveillance state, nor autism, or big pharma, or the drugging of school kids, falling test scores, or the dumbing down of schools. There isn't a single Latin American worried about school shootings or metal detectors in schools. I've never heard anyone down here complain of the erosion of his personal freedoms. Those are strictly first world problems. Thank God for lag time. It helps Latin Americans avoid all that crap. And you wonder why Latin Americans are so much happier and less stressed than first world people? So, most definitely, when you come down, you're going to press that reset button. You'll reset your happiness bar to a different level. And then, after a while, you'll get used to it. You'll be happier and less stressed as you get into the swing of things. Of course, there will be times when you get homesick for Minneapolis or Cleveland. As for me, it's been many, many years since I had any doubts about Latin America being the right move for me. Even back then, if I had doubts, all I had to do was read the news coming out of the USA or in Europe, and I compare and contrast it with life in Latin America, and suddenly, I was extremely happy that I'd gotten the hell out of Dodge. And these days, of course, you can hardly avoid the shitstorm news coming out of the first world. It's 1,000% worse than it was 10 or 20 years ago. Oh, and be forewarned, once you get your plan B going down here, there'll be times when you feel so good, you feel guilty. Like you don't deserve to be here, that karma is going to get even with you, that it'll all end tomorrow. especially if you're the kind of person who had a string of bad luck up in the States. Some people, you know, seem to have a cloud hanging over them. And even when really good things happen to them, they're always thinking disaster's right around the corner. Oh, well, you know, you are the sum of your experiences, right? That's why, you know, I could never keep a diary. I started probably back in sixth grade when one of the nuns made it an assignment for the whole class. The problem with that was it was an assignment that meant that she could look at your diary and then you're not going to put in your secret thoughts and whims, right? Anyway, I always thought it would be embarrassing to have a diary. You know, a proof of all the stupid things you did when you were younger. Man, if it got into the wrong hands, lots of movie plots were based on that theme. Anyway, when you get older, looking into your golden years, by the way, somebody tell me, what's so golden about them? Expat Eddie calls them the titanium years. Titanium hips, knees, dental implants. Thank God for stem cells, huh? When you think back on it, having a diary would have been a pretty cool thing. You can look back and reminisce, etc., etc. So how about it? Any of you listeners out there keep a diary? Now, as for me, I've always carried around a small pencil or pen and a little notebook to write ideas down. I have little idea books of all shapes and sizes all over the place. Dozens and dozens of them, going back to when I was in high school. I never actually put down dates, events, or thoughts about myself. It was just plain ideas. But that's just me. That's the nerd side of me. The problem is, sometimes I look back in those little notebooks and I can't read my own writing. No great loss. Oh, well. By the way, speaking of the first world surveillance state, how many of you listeners out there have one of those Ring cameras from Amazon? You know what I'm talking about, one of those portable door ringer cameras on your porch. Well, if I was you, I'd shit-can it right away. I'm looking at an article now from a nerdy high-tech magazine. It says in the title, Amazon's Ring is the largest civilian surveillance network the world has ever seen. You'll want to know this. Here's the highlights. It says, U.S. police departments can now access all your videos from the millions of privately owned Ring cameras without a warrant or any notification at all. They're watching everything and directly connected to you. In fact, there's a quote here from Amazon software engineer Max Elizer. He said, the Ring camera system is simply not compatible with a free society. And he's one of the developers of the thing. He says, the Ring video doorbell, Amazon's signature home security product, is a serious threat to a free and democratic society. He says, once you set up the software and click on the user agreement, Ring users then agree to release all video content to law enforcement, and there's no way to revoke access. It says, since Amazon bought the Ring camera system in 2018, police departments across the U.S. are recording content from millions of privately owned Ring systems. It says the Ring's cloud-based infrastructure, supported by Amazon Web Services, makes it very convenient for law enforcement to record everything the camera sees and hears without a warrant. Law enforcement has been given a backdoor entry into private video recordings of people in residential and public spaces that would otherwise be protected under the Fourth Amendment. But once you buy a Ring camera and click the user agreement, you've voided that. It's like having an informant living in your house, say Amazon software engineers. An informant that never sleeps. That's scary. Do you have one? You know, about a year ago, I was looking at one of those things myself. Almost bought one until I realized you had to set it up and put it on the cloud. Personally, I want nothing to do with anyone's cloud. The only thing I really put on the cloud is this show. When I'm finished with it, it's a pretty big file, so I can't send it directly over the internet. I gotta put it up in someone's cloud. But then again, there's nothing private about this show. It goes out everywhere. But still, I don't like the idea of a cloud. I never did. You know, the Stones must have been clairvoyant. 50 years ago, they wrote, hey, you, get off of my cloud. The problem is the public's been convinced it's a good thing. Just like in the early days when Madame Curie discovered radium, the public loved the stuff. X-rays, luminous dials, and irradiating people was a good and healthy thing. So they thought. They even put it in soft drinks and breakfast foods because it had that nice eerie glow. Well, we know how that turned out. These days, the thing that'll come back to bite you in the ass is the cloud. It sounds so benign, too. The cloud. Most all average, even above average people, think putting things in a cloud is a good thing. They're happy about it because now you can never lose your data, right? Uh-huh. Think about it. Anyway, I just thought I'd rant a little bit about how f***ed up those Ring cameras are. If you have one, get rid of it, or at least disconnect it from the cloud, and just feed it directly to a local computer monitor. But back to our emailer, Pete. He says he's never had kids, and he's happy about it. You know, I've never had any kids either. Though there have been countless times in my life when friends and family, etc., have tried to pressure me into it, even trying to make me feel like a selfish dickhead for not spreading my genes around. That's a common line, you know, with women and ladies who try to convince you having kids is the thing to do. They call you a selfish narcissist. Well, guilty as charged. Till you hit about 50, then your old friends start wondering, how'd you get so smart? Well, I can tell you this for sure. If I had kids, I wouldn't be doing this show right now. Because though I may have ended up in Latin America, I would have never gotten to all the Latin American countries and traveled 30 years down here while toting a kid or bunch of kids around. That just wouldn't have happened. Because you see, gringos and expats who come down with their kids usually end up staying in one place. They don't move around much because it's difficult. Kids go to school, develop patterns and friendships. And believe me, and I've heard this a million times, there's always wailing and gnashing of teeth when you try to uproot kids and family. Which begs the question I've been asked many times, did you ever want to have kids, Johnny? In a word, no. Then again, I've got lots of male friends who felt exactly the same way, and once they had a kid, suddenly they become super devoted, doting dads. The fact is, lots of guys I know do not like other people's kids, but they love their own. I guess if I had kids, I'd be one of those. The fact is, over the years, my male buddies and I have talked about that a lot. Turns out a big percentage of my buddies tell me they lied to their girlfriends and wives early in the game when first asked the question, do you want to have kids? And some of them just reluctantly agreed because that's the easy way out. I've heard my buddies say it's easier to say okay and roll with it than say no and end up in the doghouse or get into another unwinnable argument. Every guy knows early in a relationship, if you tell the girl you don't want kids, chances are for her it's a deal breaker. That's why so many guys say yes and mean no, or at best, inside, they're ambivalent. By the way, there's a strange thing going on in my family. I've got three sisters, they all have kids, and two brothers. That makes three brothers altogether, and none of us brothers has kids, and all of us are over 50. So you're thinking, what's up with that? Well, it could be a simple plumbing problem. Who knows? By the way, none of us guys in the family are gay either, though that shouldn't make any difference because gay guys can have kids. They do it all the time. The traditional way, too. Well, in fact, they've always had babies. I have two gay buddies from high school who got married young and had kids. I didn't really know they were gay back then. That was back in the closeted days. But now, looking back, there were certain signs. They got married to females, as many did, way back when. You know, to obey or follow certain conventions. They both got married right out of high school or soon into college, too. At the time, when they broke up, I felt sorry for the wives. When that happened way back when, it was divorce on top of a layer of embarrassment for not being able to figure it out before tying the knot. You know, that's something us straight guys still don't get. And don't lie, all you straight guys out there, you've had this conversation with your buddies. Why is it we all knew a gay guy or two back in high school or college, even junior high or middle school, who dated lots of beautiful girls and even got married and had kids? Why is it that we... us straight guys always knew they were gay, but the girls they went out with never did. How did us clueless guys pick up on the signals and the ladies didn't? What I'm saying is we've heard many ladies say, including my three sisters, that they've got guys completely figured out. We're simple, unsophisticated lunkheads. Easy to read, easy to dominate, easy to confuse. Yet, how is it that we can spot a gay guy even very early on in grade school, middle school, and college? While smart, beautiful, sophisticated ladies like my own sisters remain clueless and often marry these guys. Who's the simpleton there? It's one of life's mysteries straight guys just don't get. Though these days I'm sure it happens with much less frequency because there's pretty much no stigma anymore. In the first world anyway, there's no need to be closeted. But still, it happens. You hear about it sometimes. Just saying. By the way, many years ago when I first got to Antigua, Guatemala and started a business with a Belgian-Canadian guy, he told me a sad story. He said his mother left his dad for another woman. So it can happen both ways. But then you might ask, did it affect him at all? At least psychologically? Damn right, he said. He was the first one to admit it. Being a handsome, nice guy himself, he had no trouble with women. But he told me he'd never been in a relationship for more than 3 months. Trust issues, he said. You think? By the way, I have a good Latino friend who's gay. He speaks no English. Really nice guy, handsome guy, around 28 years old, and practically all his friends are good-looking women. I know, it sounds like a cliche, but it's true. So then how did I meet this guy? Well, he's my girlfriend's best friend. Yet another cliche, every beautiful woman has a gay best friend. I'm telling you, it's true. So then how did she meet him? Well, she had two beauty salons and a clothing store, and he was a makeup artist that she hired for events. So So I'm mentioning this guy now because he's my go-to source for anything in Latin America concerning gays and the gay lifestyle. In other words, I hear the unvarnished truth. No gossip, no rumors. I've known this guy for about 4 years now. And what have I learned from him about that stuff? Well, number one, he said Latin America's about 20 years behind lag time in the public, government, and business sector's acceptance of the gay lifestyle, or more specifically, what you might call in the first world anyway, the flaming gay lifestyle. In other words, up in the States anyway, if a flaming gay person goes in for an interview, it would be illegal discrimination to hold that against him as a job prospect. However, in Latin America, as my friend tells me, you go into a job interview as a flamer, you won't get the job. He says no one will pick on you or abuse you, but you won't get the job and there's nothing you can do about it. So he says if you're serious about a job interview, no makeup, no glitter, no swishing of the hips. Hey, I'm just relaying some facts here. Another thing he mentioned was that, remember, he's 28 years old. He says your Latino dad, when he finds out you're gay, will often completely disown you and reject you out of hand, whereas most mothers will completely understand. So the male macho thing still prevails with the over 50 crowd, whereas the macho thing when it comes to gays is fading fast in his generation. That'd be what, Generation Y and Z? By the way, just to clarify things, I've always had a gay friend or two ever since high school. But as for me, I'm a flaming heterosexual. Not that I had to spell it out, but you probably knew that already. By the way, you know what's nice about not having advertisers? I can talk about shit like this. And you know, some advertisers have come forward trying to hook me, but I can't be bought. Be it Budweiser, Heineken, Red Bull, or Durex condoms, no sponsor can buy me or put words in my mouth. By the way, speaking of Red Bull, have you tried that stuff? It's all over the place down here, as well as all the other so-called energy drinks. Oh, they're expensive, all right, by Latin American standards, that is. But it's the cool gringo wannabe thing to do, especially at the clubs and discos. Now, Latina ladies don't care for the stuff. It's too bitter. But Latino guys will go out of their way to order the stuff. You see, what Latino guys putting on the dog will do, will go to a restaurant or bar, sit down at a table, order up a Red Bull or equivalent, along with their preferred beer or drink, and let that Red Bull can sit there all night. So they'll open one, let it sit there all night, just for show. Now, on a strangely related topic, remember a couple of shows ago I was talking about kidney stones? Well, wouldn't you know it, after that show I got a slew of emails from a bunch of nerds. Mostly young 20-something engineering and computer nerds. And I found out something very interesting. Turns out, lots of young nerdy tech types are getting kidney stones at a ripe young age. Funny thing too, because traditionally it hits people over 50. However, it turns out there seems to be an epidemic of 20-something young nerdy types getting kidney stones, and they're tracing it back to, guess what? Energy drinks like Red Bull. Man, have you ever read the list of ingredients? Besides mega doses of caffeine, there are all kinds of chemicals with names so long you can't even pronounce them. Reminds me of what my mother used to say way back when in high school when we'd walk through the grocery store. She'd read all the labels. She was the only one who would read all the labels. She'd look at the ingredients and say, if you can't pronounce it, don't buy it. Words of wisdom, huh? So anyway, you may have heard it here first that those energy drinks like Red Bull just might be responsible for the latest epidemic of kidney stones in young adults. Ouch. Good to know. By the way, I take my caffeine the old-fashioned way. Coffee enemas. Just kidding. All right, here's an email, and it's not the first one of its kind. This is from Veronica from Bensonhurst, Illinois. Know it well. She says, Johnny, you talk too fast. I'm used to listening to podcasters like Jordan Peterson, Lex Friedman, and Joe Rogan at 1.5 speed or 2x. But I can't do that with you. That means if Rogan has a 3-hour podcast, I know it'll only take me 1.5 hours to get through it. But your 28-minute podcasts are exactly that, 28 minutes for me. Love you anyway. Signed, Veronica. Thanks for that, Veronica, but ain't we picky? Never really considered it a problem. Oh, well. But really, Veronica, you put your finger on something there. You're right. Here in Podcastistan land, there are lots of people I listen to at 1.5 or 2x. I guess everyone blathers at their most comfortable vocal rhythm. Hey, at least you have the option to 1.5 or 2x, right? Remember the old days of cassettes and the early MP3s? There was no such option. All right, here's some new news about counterfeit money you'll find whilst traipsing through Latin America. First of all, if you've ever been down here, you'll notice that everywhere, and I mean everywhere, when you hand someone a bill, whether it's US dollar funny money or the local funny money, they'll hold it up to the light, looking for identification threads, watermarks, and Mylar strips. Lots of times, you know, these guys are dumb as a box of rocks and they don't really know what the hell they're looking at anyway, but it looks official. Sure, it irks you, but it's an edict from management. There is a reason, because there are lots of counterfeits floating around. That's why I never like to change money with one of those guys standing on the street corner waving wads at you. What do you and I know about the local funny money counterfeit versions? Hell, we'd hardly be able to recognize U.S. counterfeit money. Anyway, as of December 2022, the two Latin American countries with the most amount of fake U.S. dollars floating around are Ecuador and Venezuela. In fact, just lately, this year, a huge wave of fake modified U.S. dollars, usually in small bills, have been flooding Venezuela and Ecuador. Investigators have discovered the fake U.S. dollars going to Venezuela are mostly coming out of Colombia and Peru. While Ecuador, they use the U.S. dollar, you know, they've been producing their own fake bills. And here are the recent facts. The Ecuadorian National Police and the U.S. Secret Service have seized over 7 million in counterfeit bills so far in 2022. The 2022 seizures represent a value increase of 3,000% over 2021. That's 3,000%. So how do they do it? Well, so far, all the printing operations that have been discovered are located in rural areas because machines are noisy and easy to detect in populated areas. It's also a fact that counterfeit money is more easily passed in the boonies, where people are sort of rubes. In the boonies, people are less sophisticated about it, and there are lots of farmers and agricultural workers. So in Ecuador, anyway, the fake money is printed and sold directly to the gangs and the narcos. The actual value is approximately 10% of the nominal value. In other words, you can buy a $20 fake bill for $2 from the counterfeiters, a $100 bill for $10. However, it's the small bills, the 5s, 10s, and 20s that are in big demand because everyone knows fake $100 Franklins are common and hard to get rid of. It's a funny thing, too, almost beyond irony, that you could walk in the average Latin American mom-and-pop store or even a regular chain grocery store, for that matter, hand them 10 or even $5 in U.S. dollars or the local funny money, and they won't have change for you. Which begs the question, why so many fake $100 bills floating around down here when you can't get change for a $10? Yet another one of those cosmic mysteries, huh? So then you might wonder, how do they get mass circulation of any of these bills when every time you hand one of them to a cashier, he's checking for watermarks in Mylar strips? Well, as mentioned, most of this stuff does not happen in the big city, but out in the boonies. Gangs use counterfeit money to offer illegal loans on micro and small businesses that don't have access to credit from any of the local banks. Think of the example of El Salvador. They got a little over 6 million people there. And fully 60% of them do not have a bank account, which was one of the go-to reasons for getting on the Bitcoin standard. For Bitcoin, or most any crypto, you don't need a bank account, only a cell phone. And everyone in Latin America, even the shoeshine boy, had a smartphone for his WhatsApp. Hell, even now, you could buy a capable smartphone that'll handle all that and WhatsApp for $30 to $50. In fact, there's a huge secondary market in used cell phones. That means the Samsung or iPhone you trade in for the latest model often ends up down here in the hands of a cleaning lady or a tortilla vendor. So anyway, that's how many gangs get the counterfeit money into circulation. They offer loans to small businesses and people mostly in the boonies who don't have bank accounts. That's in Ecuador. Now in Venezuela, it's a different story because, you see, their economy is completely destroyed and the average person makes about $50 a month. So for them, the most common form of falsification is to take real U.S. $5 bills and modify them to look like 50s. That way, they're guaranteed to pass the watermark and microfiber test because they started out as real $5 bills. You'll find them being used mostly off the books, generally on the street, where people have no way to apply information about how to identify fake bills. They just don't have the means, the technology to do it. So my advice is never use one of those money changer guys you see on street corners or those guys walking around when you're driving your car through a border. Always change your money at banks or a legit money changing store or tienda. All right, now an email from Warren. He says, Johnny, you're so right about El Salvador and fake news to discredit anything President Bukele has done there. Matter of fact, I'm a lily white soon to be expat. But I had the pleasant surprise of visiting El Salvador and the Bitcoin coast last year. I must say I was impressed with the country, felt completely safe at every venue, and would not mind visiting there at all again, even having a plan B there. I understand you'll be visiting there for your next seminar. I need to have some boots on the ground with someone in the know like you, so I'll be coming. On the same note comes an email from Janie C. She says, Johnny, I commend President Bukele from Salvador. I work with a few Salvadorans in Minneapolis. They say he's doing a fabulous job. And he's giving Salvadorians who've escaped to the States new hope. Then there's this email from Carol. He says, I understand 60,000 gang members were thrown in the slammer in El Salvador. That's 60,000 would-be Democratic voters for Biden once they realize Salvador won't tolerate gangs anymore. Yes, I predict once they're out, there'll be 60,000 more Democratic voters on their way, clothed, fed, and paying money to the cartels for protection to get to the States. Once they sneak in, they'll be funded by working Americans through our taxes, compliments of Biden and friends. Then comes this email from Victor. He says, Johnny, I'm a legal second-generation Mexican-American, and nearly every Mexican-American I know wholeheartedly supports President Bukele of Salvador. All of us would gladly have a guy like him in Mexico as president instead of useless President López Obrador. You know, the hugs, not guns guy. Then he says, Mexico needs to follow El Salvador's example, but they won't. Though countries like Guatemala and Honduras will. In fact, they're having high-level meetings with Bukele now. They get the fact that after 30 years of gangs running the country, something's finally working, and they desperately want to copy his plan. But they have to walk a fine line because First World human rights activists will whine, and the U.S. and the U.N. and the big agencies will punish the countries by cutting off their loans and grants, just as they've threatened Bukele in El Salvador. And how about this email from Bill and Rosie in Colorado? They said, Johnny, we did a week's vacation in El Salvador in June 2021. We flew into the airport outside of San Salvador, rented a car, and drove around. We don't know anyone there. It was just kind of a Plan B fact-finding trip. After a few days, we drove south and down to the surfing and Bitcoin beach area. And at no time did either of us ever feel threatened. Everyone we met were kind and humble, though occasionally the local authorities gave me a suspicious glance. But they were decent and nice, too. We'll definitely be back. It's on our Plan B list. Sure, we saw some third world poverty, but a lot of happiness and no gang violence at all. All right, me, Johnny here. Just thought I'd read you a sample of some of the emails I get from people, their actual boots-on-the-ground trips to El Salvador and how it differs from all that fake news coming at you up north. Anyway, the sign-up sheet for my next Expat Insider Seminar should be available in a day or so. All the info and details will be available at expatplanb.com. The seminar will be a week long. We'll be doing two countries, El Salvador and Guatemala. You won't want to miss it. Sign up soon and get that $500 early bird discount.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.